Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Colgan. Chris Woff, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm alright, thank you. I am back from Newcastle United's training ground after Eddie Howe's pre-Manchester City press conference. Yeah. And it felt like there was a change of tone in the room, a sort of hardening to a certain extent. Mm.
Excuse me, Chris.
I'm not sure you should be doing that at a press conference, Chris, to be honest.
Yeah, would you like to clarify that comment immediately, Chris?
I would not, know. What I would like to do is say that, regardless, I am sure that I will still get a lot of tweets posts on X over the course of the next 24 hours telling me that I need to ask the hard questions, so apologies in advance to everyone.
Your questions tend to be more flaccid, don't they, Chris?
What an erotic start to this podcast. Amazing.
And if you hadn't already guessed, George Colkin's here as well. George, how are you? You all right? I'm getting a bit hot under the collar here. I was going to use the
word uplift when you asked me how I was. I don't think it's now appropriate. I'm not sure. Maybe it is appropriate. I'm just warning you that I'm going to be the voice of rampant positivity today. Because after the negativity of the start of the week, I've got my ticket for Man City in the post and I'm really looking forward to it.
It's in the post, so you haven't actually got it.
No, that's why I'm optimistic, because I haven't got my ticket in time and I don't have to go. No, I've got my ticket and I'm going to drive down with Chris. I'm going to be in the away end. I'm looking forward to it. I may feel very differently in a couple of days' time, but no, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be a good atmosphere, and let's do it. Come on.
Absolutely. So there's only really one item on the agenda today, and that's that Man City game. But this morning, just before we started recording, Amanda Staveley posted a statement on Instagram, rowing back on comments she made about Steve Bruce at the Bloomberg event in Jeddah last week. The statement along the lines of, when you have a coach who doesn't want to come to work. Chris Woff, I'm going to come to you with this. You spent 6 months off work on maternity leave, didn't you? Is Amanda Staveley going to make any comments about you soon?
Well, I was hoping George might issue an apology.
Why would I issue an apology for you not coming into work?
Well, yeah, I suppose it's a fair point. Yeah, I didn't want to come to work during that time, so I suppose.
Have I ever wanted to come into work? I don't know. This is as interesting. It's an interesting. I don't think many Newcastle fans wanted Steve Bruce to come into work anyway, did they? I mean, or was that hard?
She got it the wrong way around, didn't she?
I mean, what she said, just to be clear, she said that the suggestion she made was not correct and that Steve Bruce was fully committed to his role at the club and always came to work during this period.
Definitely. Yeah.
And she was like to make clear that it was not her intention to question or undermine his professionalism.
Yeah, I mean, to be serious about that, I mean, it's obviously, I mean, I don't know whether Steve Bruce wants to kind of get back into management, but it's not a great look for a manager to sort of be saying, or the suggestion that he doesn't want to do his job. That was never the case at the time. I think once the takeover happened, he was very open and honest about his own position with the new owners and sort of said that his position was probably untenable with supporters and with the way things were going. So I think you can sort of understand how that comment might have been made. And I think they appreciated that honesty. So I think that was a misspeaking.
Yes, that's absolutely fair enough. Right then, chap, shall we crack on?
Let's do it.
Good stuff. FA Cup. It's the bloody FA Cup quarterfinals, isn't it? We joked last week, Chris, didn't we, that Anthony Gordon was nailed on to start this game after we originally thought he wasn't going to start any games for quite a while. And here he is. It appears he's been training and it seems like he's in contention.
Partly trained yesterday was exactly
partly trained
Eddie Howe's phrase.
Yeah, it was a strange one because I think initially when you see a player come off like that, you do fear that there's a serious injury. But no, he sort of partly trained yesterday. And what I mean by that is we didn't do a great deal with the schedule that we've had this week, but he joined in and seemed okay. So I don't think he did anything serious, and that's great news for us.
When he was asked, does that mean that Anthony Gordon is going to be available at Man City? He said, well, we have training today, so we shall see. As you would say,
doesn't matter.
He did actually rule out Harvey Barnes, though, so Harvey Barnes will not be fit with his hamstring problem.
No, he ruled out Harvey Barnes, which means Harvey Barnes will play.
Yeah.
I'm so confused. I mean,
I've got no idea what's going on anymore.
Don't know what, but I mean, I guess that's the idea. What? I guess that's the idea. Hopefully, Pep Guardiola's confused.
I mean, it's a real positive that certainly Anthony Gordon looks to have avoided any sort of serious injury. The way that he was struggling to run on Monday, and I'm sure that hopefully after yesterday and later today, he will show no ill effects of that. It would still seem to me a quick turnaround from to start at Man City 5 days after the fact he couldn't run. But equally, no. I'm not a medical expert, so I have no idea.
No, definitely not.
I think we spoke, and Chris and I certainly wrote in the week saying it was, you know, would be hugely disappointing for him, you know, not to be called up by England. And that's, you know, now that's happened. And, you know, just wanted to say that's absolutely brilliant. I think it's really important that it's happened. I know that Newcastle have had other England internationals in Callum Wilson and Nick Pope and Kieran Trippier, obviously, in recent times. But I just think it's, you know, every time that's happened, it's a reminder that Newcastle isn't the graveyard for footballers' ambitions anymore, certainly shouldn't be. And he has been excellent. He has been really, really good. He's been consistent in terms of his performance. He's been consistent in terms of his availability. He's been one of the driving forces behind the team this season in a really difficult season. And it just happened from day one after that sort of brilliant pre-season he had with the England under-21s. And yeah, just absolutely really well deserved. And hope he gets a chance to shine with England too once the cup game's out of the way.
Yes, it would be absolutely massive if he makes this game, Chris, wouldn't it? Especially with Harvey Barnes out of the way, as we've said, there's a good chance he won't make it.
Yeah, so Harvey Barnes not being available is, I mean, it's frustrating. Again, someone who was out for so long with his foot problem and now has a hamstring injury. I mean, Howe today even said there may be a correlation between one and the other, and they aren't entirely sure yet, but they're sort of looking at that. He said Barnes' injury, they hope, isn't serious. He's been out on the grass as well. I don't think he's been doing anything sort of strenuous, but he is out on the grass. So as positive as Gordon's injury news is, Newcastle still have, as has been the season of injuries, still have problems there. So, I mean, George and I, in a piece that we wrote this week, sort of picked our own 11s for tomorrow. We did it on the basis, the assumption that Anthony Gordon wouldn't be fully fit to start. Now, I think that the way that Howe was talking today, that there probably is a greater chance that Gordon will start. But if he doesn't, how do you sort of cover for that without Barnes? How do you cover for, arguably, well, I think probably, in my opinion, Newcastle's player of the season so far? He's been involved in 10 goals in terms of scoring them, 5 assists. And we both had different sort of interpretations of what we do. I feel the team needs freshening up a little bit. I would do something which I don't expect anyhow to do, which is although I'm loath to move Tino Livramento from the position he's playing well in, I would put him right-sided forward, almost, as he played during his youth career, have Kraft at right back, and I'd bring Lewis Miley in as well just to freshen up the midfield and take Sean Longstaff out, who I think field needs a rest. Now, all of that, I say, I very much doubt that will happen, and that's the reason why I'm not Newcastle United's manager, because I would just make batshit suggestions.
I don't think that's the only reason why you're not Newcastle United manager, is it, Chris? Is it? I mean, do you have any coaching badges whatsoever? Do you have any experience in managing a team? I mean, at any level?
Have you got any swimming badges, Chris? Do you have anything?
Yeah, what badges do you actually have?
Anything from Cubs or Scouts?
No, I was the worst Cub ever, because I couldn't be bothered to actually get any of my badges. So,
not even helping elderlies across the road, Chris. That's terrible.
I've got cycling proficiency. 25-metre swimming badge, I think.
I used to go swimming, but I didn't do lengths. I did depths. I found them easier.
Right. Well, you just sank, you mean?
Essentially, yeah. That's my version of partly training, the same as Anthony Gordon this week.
Okay, partly. I love the idea of partly trained. He's got a slightly dodgy knee, so he just hopped on his other leg. Is that how he partly trained? I mean, I like that idea.
But anyway, George, use your swimming badge, your 25-metre swim badge, to explain what your team selection would have been.
Well, it is redundant now because if Anthony Gordon plays, but I sort of understand your strange logic. I would be very reluctant to move Tino Livramento from his best position, and particularly after he played so well at Chelsea and in for such a big game. I do understand your thinking, but I don't like playing players out of position where there are other options. So I would keep him where he was, and I think the sort of natural thing to do would be to play both Murphy and Almiron. I'm not And I would keep Sean Longstaff in the team because I think it's, whilst you're definitely right to say that Sean needs a break, I think you can make the same claim of absolutely everybody else in the team. And I think Sean's kind of experience is important, and he's missed when he doesn't play. I love Lewis Miley. You know, he is the future. I think the reason why he's not been playing recently isn't a reflection on him or his performances or his talent. It is, I think, a reflection of his age and the fact he's played way more football than Newcastle expected. And you know, there's a duty to protect him too. I think so. That would have been my team. But if Gordon is fit, then I wouldn't really be making changes.
And Lewis Hall should be available for this one as well, after missing Chelsea through all that parent club nonsense. And Big Dan Byrne as well. He had a nasty fall, didn't he, in the Chelsea game, and he looked like he was struggling for a few minutes. Is his back all right, Chris?
That's the suggestion. I mean, Eddie Howe said immediately after the game on that one that he thought Byrne was okay, and so we haven't had any inkling. Obviously, he's not going to offer up that. He wasn't asked directly about Byrne this morning, and he isn't going to offer that up because he doesn't actually answer questions, direct questions about injuries usually. Just on Lewis Hall, I mean, Lewis Hall and Lewis Miley have both just been called into England's under-20 elite squad as well for games against Poland and Cheshire.
Cheshire,
apparently.
Okay. It shushed a bit shout of Manchester.
I like that, it's very good.
But anyway, I mean, for Lewis Miley in particular, very much deserved. Lewis Hall's been in been in that squad before and made a lot of appearances for England at 20. So hopefully he actually gets some game time because he's a player who certainly requires it given his lack of game time recently. But Matt Target was back on the bench at Chelsea. I think it was very much he would only be used in emergencies, and I think that's likely to be the case tomorrow as well. But after the international break, there should be another option left back there as well.
I mean, Lewis Hall has not played a single minute in the FA Cup so far this season, and that includes games against two championship sides. I think I'm right in saying that, Chris?
Yes, that's correct.
So it would be a surprise, despite the sort of clamour, and Chris never ever asking questions to Eddie Howe about him. It would be a surprise to see him play.
Well, he did play 4 minutes off the bench against Man City in the 3-2 defeat in January in the league, though. So
in the league.
One of only his two appearances in 2024. The other one was 8 minutes against Liverpool off the bench.
Keeping him for the big games, Chris. That's what it is. Well, Howe might make changes, mightn't he? There might be a little bit of rotation in there. Sven Botman's form's been a little bit concerning of late. Could Jamal Lascelles be due a standard appearance against City, George?
Well, I mean, yes. Neither Chris or I in our kind of predicted teams did that actually. But yes, again, his form at Chelsea was a concern, and you know, form and fitness, I think, are concerns. I think they're valid concerns. So,
but Lascelles has handled Haaland quite well, hasn't he? In the past as well, he's played against him a few times and done well against him.
At the same time, I think Howe will name his absolutely strongest possible team. And if you're, you know, all things being equal, then Botman is definitely, you know, one of the first names in that team. So, yeah, that's a tricky one.
I mean, in terms of Lascelles, that would have been, if I was going to make another change to the team, that would have, I think, would have been taking Botman out and bringing Lascelles in.
Yeah.
Again, for my twisted logic, I just thought making too many changes is not ideal, but equally, there are so many arguments you could make for quite a few players, certainly on the basis of Monday night's performance anyway.
I'd eat war kid.
And you mentioned before that Sean Longstaff could be due a break. The news this week's been that he's been playing through a foot complaint. And I'm not a physio, Chris, but I'd imagine feet are quite important when it comes to being a professional footballer. We're not likely to have much possession, are we? So when we do have the ball, we want to be able to use it, don't we? So could Miley be more suited to that than Sean, do we think?
I mean, possibly.
Fucking hell, Chris has launched his microphone off his desk.
Oh dear, that was the most animated I've seen. Most animated I've seen.
Some kind of protest there, Chris. I'm not answering this shit question.
Oh. Of course, you can't. People listening can't see what we saw, but yeah, Chris just punched his own microphone, and it went flying across the screen.
Exploded as well.
Oh my word, Chris, what are you doing?
What a moment.
What was the question? Lewis Miley. and Sean Longstaff. Possibly, I mean, you've got to remember that Lewis Miley still is only 17 years of age, and so...
Is he, Chris?
Him, yeah.
No one's well, mentioned nobody that. Ever mentions I just it, realized yeah. that's yeah, the I'd first time everyone. I've heard that.
Do we need to check this? Because we've been referring to Lewis Miley as being 17 for about 3 years. Yeah. Like, can't be. Is he actually still 17 or is he 25 now?
To put him back into the team away at Man City, I mean, Eddie Howe clearly has confidence in him, but that would be a big call in many regards. I've backed that in my own team, but I also realise that it's a bold move to make. Newcastle are highly unlikely to have much possession, but in January, Sean Longstaff did play in that match. So did Lewis Miley, but Newcastle were at home in that game. They allowed Man City to have a lot of the ball, but then attacked fiercely when they could. And that's what you'd like to see, I assume, in the way that Newcastle set up tomorrow. I asked Howe about, because he was asked about the setup and the game plan, and I sort of said to Howe, is it more difficult, or is it different at least, in an FA Cup game or a cup game as relative to a league match? Because in a league match, obviously, there is the chance that you can potentially get a draw from it, but in a cup game, you have to get the balance right because you have to want to try and progress. And he said he understood the question, but that he never goes it. He still doesn't go into any match wanting a draw. He goes in attempting to win. And the basis for my question was when Newcastle played Man City in the FA Cup quarterfinal after Project Restart, and the accusation afterwards was that Steve Bruce had seemingly tried to play for a draw, and Newcastle had set up in a way where it looked like they were trying to play for a draw, and obviously a draw is irrelevant in the game. Eventually you're going to have to, or they even try to play for penalties. You can't do that against Man City there, he had.
No.
But I do think that you're going to have to accept they're going to have most of the ball, and then when you get the ball, you're going to have to be efficient with it, as Newcastle were against them in January, as they were to a certain extent against Wolves 10, 12 days ago. If they play like they did against Chelsea on Monday night, it really could be a very, very difficult evening for Newcastle, because that's what makes you concerned that they would just get really cut open over and over again.
I do want to sort of draw attention to what Eddie Howe said about Sean Longstaff at the press conference today, because I do think it's important, and there has been, certainly online, there's been quite a lot of criticism of his performances, and I think that's, you know, I think that's fine. I think we've said here that he sort of does need a rest. We've also talked about him possibly playing through injury. And Eddie Howe said, I've had no other midfielders to play. I would have rested Sean for sure. I've got to look after Lewis. He's only 17. Apparently he is only 17. He turns 18 on the 1st of May, by the way. Ollie, our producer, tells us. Anderson hasn't been available. Sandro hasn't been available. I've had nobody else to pick. He says he would have rested him. He would have given him a break. And he's also said that he's been playing with a foot injury, which he's had since the end of last season. Now, that's not ideal. He had an injection in his foot, and that's allowed him to kind of carry on playing. We have to acknowledge this happens regularly in football. I mean, it's very rare that a footballer is 100% fit. I mean, as someone who runs very, very badly, I know that, you know, the idea, the notion of being 100% fit just is a sort of a fallacy. You're always carrying a knock or a niggle of some sort. Newcastle United are incredibly lucky to have a core of players who want to play for this club, and I know that sounds like very, very basic, but who are prepared to put their bodies on the line and come back into the team when arguably it's not in their best interest to do that. We saw this earlier this season, Dan Burn breaking 3 bones in his back, and in his own admission coming back weeks earlier than possibly he should, because he was desperate to help out. This is such a valuable quality to have in a dressing room. A dressing room isn't just about talented footballers. I mean, yes, you want it to be. It's about good characters and people wanting to help each other. Now, that has been one of the really precious, valuable stories at the club for the past couple of years, and even actually before then, with the group that sort of helped Newcastle get up and then stay up, doing very, very difficult circumstances. And I know people have got opinions on those players and whether they should still be around, but you know, we do have a responsibility every now and again just to remind ourselves of that. Yes, Sean might not be playing the best football of his career at the minute, but he's desperate to be out there. He's playing for the team that he supports and he wants to help. And I do think that philosophy is there in spades at Newcastle. It's been a really tough season. It's been draining. It's been grueling. But that sort of attitude, I mean, let's reverse the situation. If Sean had made himself unavailable And if other players have made himself unavailable, Newcastle would virtually have been unable to name a team this season. So,
yeah,
by all means, offer criticism, and you know, that's in the heat of matches. It's absolutely fair, but you know, we also have to be respectful of these players who are trying their nuts off.
Eddie Howe, Chris, having chosen to stick against Wolves, he then twisted at Chelsea and busted out. Ridiculous blackjack analogies aside, what are we anticipating at the Etihad this weekend?
I do think it'll be more similar to the sort of Wolves blueprint, and Newcastle probably even have less of the ball, certainly significantly less. I mean, this is not a ground that Newcastle tend to perform well, as Stamford Bridge isn't, but just looking at NUFC.com for I was going to say inspiration, but that would be completely
that's the wrong
incorrect.
Word.
No, for some information. Yeah. Newcastle are unbeaten in cup competitions at the Etihad, though, in the one visit that they had there in a cup competition, which was obviously the League Cup success of October 2024, when the midfield three consisted of Jack Colback, Mehdi Abid, and Ryan Taylor in a 2-0 win.
2014,
yeah.
Yeah, you said 2024, didn't you?
Did I?
Yeah. That's why I kind of thought, hang on, what are you on about? There was one before.
Well, maybe that's just me preempting tomorrow. Maybe, you know, that's just me preempting what's going to happen tomorrow. Definitely. But if 19 Premier League visits to the Etihad, Newcastle have lost 17 and drawn the other two, and they haven't scored since 2018, so they've had 510 scoreless minutes since DeAndre Yedlin scored there. But apart from that, apart from that, really, really positive feeling good at this one, so yeah. I think my aggregate score there is something like 27-3.
I think we've lost 9 in a row there. I think that's right. But as I've said, I'm the voice of utterly irrational positivity today. I've been to the Etihad, I think, have I seen the last three games there? Maybe I didn't do the last one. But I saw them lose their 5-0 at the end of 21-22 with my brother. Saw them lose 2-0 there, 22-23. This season in the league, it was 1-0. Now, by my logic, that means Newcastle will draw this game over 90 minutes and then win on penalties.
I mean, that's, you can't question that, can you? That's completely infallible.
Well,
to
5-0, 2-0, 1-0, maybe 2-all, and then win on penalties.
Could a magical comeback be required, George? You picked out your favourite Newcastle comeback for The Athletic this week. No prizes for guessing which one it is, though.
Yeah, that was on the basis of, what was it, Bournemouth-Luton, and that kind of crazy game. And so, yeah, the day after, Athletic writers were asked to nominate their favourites. I mean, I had two under consideration. One was the 2-all at Goodison Park a few years ago, where Everton were winning 2-0 into the 93rd minute. I happened to be in the away end for that match, and I wrote about it for The Athletic. I love that piece. I still love that piece. And it was one of the most pointless and brilliant comebacks ever, because Florian Lejeune comes on, scores twice somehow, and Newcastle somehow escape with a point in a match they were utterly shit in. And it was just hilarious. It was like, in that moment, it was one of the funniest, best things I've ever seen. But, of course, completely redundant. But that wasn't the answer that I gave. The answer I did give, of course, was Newcastle 4, Arsenal 4.
Yes.
Newcastle 1-0 behind after a matter of seconds, and then I think 4-0 behind by the 26th minute or something like that. Arsenal have a player sent off. Joey Barton scores a couple of penalties, sandwiching a goal from Leon Best, and then, of course, pandemonium when Cheick Tiote launches one from long range with his wrong foot and is then covered in a heap of Newcastle United players. And I was there reporting on the game for the Times. I remember speaking to Newcastle fans who'd left at half-time, thinking that was that and forever regretting it. And it recalled to my mind, so I was, one of my jobs afterwards was to try and find people who'd sort of left, and one story that was relayed back to me was a Newcastle fan who went to a bookies in the stadium at half time and said, what will you give me for 4-4? And the bookmaker replied, a straitjacket. And he didn't put the bet on.
Good Lord.
But what a day that was.
This is where Chris Woff pops up and says it can't be a proper comeback because Arsenal got a man sent off or something along them lines. You know, it only counts as a real comeback if it's 11 against 11. Sounds like something you'd say, Chris.
It does. But no, actually, I'm not going to be negative on this one. But I was at university in Edinburgh at the time, and my flatmate, who was also a Newcastle fan, had been on night shift. And so I was watching the game on probably not legal means in the living room, but he was doing likewise in his bedroom. And my stream was obviously behind his because I was sat on the sofa when it was still 4-3 before the ball has come out to check Tiote, and my flatmate ran into the living room and sort of threw his arms up in the air and then realised I hadn't seen, so put his arms down again, and then when Tiote scored, he jumped on top of me on the sofa. So yeah.
Which was a theme of the day, of course, because the late beloved Cheick Tiote, of course, just ran the length of the pitch after scoring, and he sort of said afterwards that, I mean, he said both that it was the best moment of his life, best moment of his career, but that there was nothing in his head, and there was nothing in it. I mean, there couldn't be anything in his head apart from the noise of St James's, and yeah, is utterly piled on by every single Newcastle player, including Steve Harper, of course, you know. Our friend did the people's elbow, the wrestling move, landed on Leon Best, did his hamstring, so Leon Best had to come off.
Missed two games, didn't he?
Because
of it.
And he missed games. And of course, this was 7 days or something after Newcastle had sold Andy Carroll for $35 million to Liverpool, not got a replacement. It was one of those weeks I'd you know, remember that. And Alan Pardew had said, you know, he's not going anywhere, we're not selling him, you don't sell your best players, and of course he'd gone, and he was bang, right under pressure, and 4-0 down. It's, you know, we've all experienced this as Newcastle fans, that feeling that there's a trapdoor right beneath the club, and you're going to plunge through it. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, did that game have meaning? I don't know, but it was like, it was just such an incredible moment. To come back to the original question, I hope Newcastle don't go behind at Man City. Good, yeah. Because I'm not sure they'll get back. I'm not sure they will get back against a side that good.
If they did have to, who would you back to get the sort of Cheick Tiote style screamer equaliser?
So that was sort of it's got to be somebody unlikely, doesn't it? And as I say, it was his, I'm sure he hit it with his left foot. I don't think it was his preferred foot he hit it with. I mean, it was sort of nonsense.
So who's the most unlikely scorer with the weakest weak foot that we can think of?
Well, I suppose in terms of what we've just said, there would be a nice moment if Sean Longstaff was able to sort of do that smack win in from long range. He's, you know, he has scored a few goals this season and has shown himself capable of doing it. That would be a nice story. I don't think that kind of quite counts as unlikely though, does it?
Maybe not. I think quite unlikely would be Miguel Almiron, but with his right foot. That would be quite unlikely, wouldn't it? We could go for that.
Yeah.
Chris, if we are going to win or draw and go through on pens, we're going to need a bit of aggression to be at our best, aren't we?
Without a doubt. I mean, that's where Eddie Howe's Newcastle have been at their very best during his time at the club, has been when they have been front foot in terms of, and I don't mean that in terms of dominating possession at the Etihad necessarily, but I mean in terms of in your face, restricting the opposition in terms of timing that they have on the ball, intensity, and really that aggression and basically the sort of gamesmanship which maybe returned a little bit against Wolves and that again we didn't see as much of at Chelsea on Monday night. If Newcastle are to get a positive result, then I have no doubt there is going to be significant shithousing at some point during the game. I imagine Jason Tindall will be fully involved in that on the touchline, and they'll have to be, because Newcastle are going to need that. They're going to need a bit of luck as well. Howe himself even said that today. He said that we know if we're going to win at Man City that we need to be at our very best, we need to execute a game plan which we need to get right, but then you're also going to need a bit of luck because this is, as he termed it, the best team in the world right now. So whether everyone agrees with that, they're certainly in the top two or three and they are imperious at the Etihad. So yeah.
Come on, you Maggies.
And we have talked a little bit as well about this feeling a bit like the end of the road for this iteration of Newcastle United, probably their last chance of a trophy as well. But how saying it might not be possible to overhaul the squad to the level that some people are expecting?
Yes, I mean, his exact quote is actually that it pretty much impossible, he thinks, for Newcastle to overhaul the squad this summer. Now, the caveat to this is what do you define as an overhaul? What does that actually mean?
Yeah.
Does that mean you're changing 10 players, selling 10 players, getting 10 players in? Does it mean 5? there is no real definition of that. I mean, I think what he's basically trying to say is that it's not going to be a complete sort of blank slate and really start again. There are still going to be players here who maybe, if you were given that chance to really start a squad again in terms of quality-wise or looking at that elite footballer-wise, you might not have in there. But Newcastle are going to have a degree of continuity within the squad because that's just it's just not possible otherwise. And certainly within a PSR world, even if they sell players to buy, as we expect they're going to have to do, which will free up room, there is still a limit to what they can do. And there is also a limit to how much they can actually increase their wage budget, which is the big thing that contributes to FFP and PSR every year that everyone forgets about. They talk about transfer fees, but the wage budget is another one. And Newcastle can't just upgrade every single player that they have for players on wages two or three times, whatever that figure is. So I think it's trying to, as I say, you can be cute because there is no actual definition of overhaul. But I also think that Eddie Howe is trying to dampen expectations a little bit going into the summer to not make it, and also because he knows he's going to have to rely on a lot of those players going forward, and a lot of them are still going to be there.
Just very quickly on that sort of specific thing, I think we've sort of referred to it as a big summer, and I think that's how I'd refer to it, because I think there are going to be big decisions. As things stand, Newcastle can't overhaul their squad. Yeah. That's fact, because they have been up against their limit of PSR. We saw this in January. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't bring anybody in. They looked at selling to buy, weren't able to do it. So there are big decisions to be made this summer about how they get around that and what they do. Now, you know, does that mean if offers come in for a big player like Bruno, for example, who's been exceptional for us and, you know, nobody wants to see him go, does that then allow them to reinvest on 3-4 players? If that offer doesn't come in, if they don't want to sell, how do they generate funds? Well, the other way of doing it is by selling homegrown players. Now, that tugs at the heartstrings to a little, you know, to a certain extent, because, you know, do you want to lose that sort of local element to your team? Well, no, ideally you want to keep it. Eddie Howe's talked about that. But, you know, the squad has been exposed by Europe this season, by more games in both competitions. By the way, when I talked about rampant optimism at the start of the show, it is worth just remembering that the idea of Newcastle getting to one quarterfinal a couple of years ago would have been the cause of bunting and open-top bus celebrations. Now Newcastle have done it in two. I know that's not the ultimate aim, but it's, you know, Newcastle are competing. They have found a way to compete in Champions League. Didn't end the way we wanted it, but in the Champions League, in the League Cup and the FA Cup. And that's, you know, that is a sign of progress. It doesn't feel like it very much at the minute, but that is a sign of progress. But yeah, it feels overhaul is one word, definitely a big summer. Some are big decisions.
But also, George, a big overhaul might not necessarily be desirable, would it? I mean, dressing rooms are pretty delicate ecosystems, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing that we do forget sometimes, that it's, you know, I sort of talked about that a bit earlier, talking about having players who want to be at the club, who want to play, who are making themselves available. And that is the other thing. Now, one thing that Howe has been really deliberate about since day one is building on what was already there. Now, in lots of ways, there was a failing team there that he inherited. But in other ways, he recognised that there was a camaraderie, there was a togetherness, there was a unity, there was a very valuable spirit that the players he's brought in has added to, that they've bought into what was already there. Now, with people like Kieran Trippier, for example, my God, yeah, he's lifted everybody up a notch. But that character, that spirit, that personality has been protected and augmented. And I'm sure it's been tested a lot this season by circumstances. But we don't have to look too far in the Premier League. You've got teams like Chelsea who've just brought in a shitload of players, have massive, unwieldy squads. It becomes incredibly difficult for the manager to pick a right, strong team. Managers want tight squads wherever possible. Nottingham Forest, Taylor, when we were talking about this beforehand, you mentioned them, something very similar there. There is a definite danger in losing 5, 6, 7 players and bringing in 5, 6, 7 players, however good they might be. And that will be something that Howe will be very, very keen to prevent happening, because, again, it doesn't feel like it at the moment, perhaps, but this is a really strong, powerful dressing room, and that ethos you know, will be important for seasons to come, hopefully.
Yeah, you don't want to upset the balance or the equilibrium in that dressing room, do you?
Yeah.
Right then, let's move on. A couple of things just to finish off, chaps. Good luck to the lasses at Wolves. And it looks like there's still a few tickets left for the FAWNL Cup Final against Hashtag United at Luton on the 23rd. Also, thanks to Joe Bray, who sent us a lovely email asking about Bobby Clark, amongst other things. Clark scored for Liverpool last night on a good night for England's coefficient, Chris, didn't he?
Yes, so in terms of the coefficient chat, that is to do with whether English clubs could have five in qualifying directly from the league for the Champions League next season, and a lot of English clubs progressed and did very well, so that has aided them, whereas some German teams who are Germany are sort of competing with England for that extra place means that in theory might give Newcastle a greater chance of being able to qualify for European competition from the league, but we're still also seeking clarity on that as to whether 8th place in the Premier League would revert to a Europa Conference League position if A, the Premier League gets the 5th Champions League spot, and B, if a team wins the FA Cup who's already in European competition. Now, in terms of Bobby Clark, that is a one which obviously is very relevant from a Newcastle United point of view, because he left Newcastle's academy to join Liverpool about, I think it was 2 months before the takeover. Didn't see the pathway into the first team, didn't see the level being high enough to be able to really build on his talents. The son of Lee Clark, obviously the former Newcastle United midfielder.
Lee Clark.
Chris, you've started the podcast talking about erections in the press Lee room, Cock. And you've ended the podcast talking about Lee Cock.
Lee Cock.
What do you have? Do you have something that you want to talk about?
I'm just going to continue as normal. So Lee Clark, yes, the former Newcastle midfielder, and yeah. So in terms of,
I'm just glad Brian Penis doesn't play for Newcastle anymore.
I'm going to keep talking. I'm still going to keep talking.
Oh, I can't see. I've got tears in my eyes.
So Lewis Miley has obviously broken through subsequently, but that was a huge talent that Newcastle lost from their academy, and that is something which they hope to change going forward, which they don't want their best players to be going and performing for Liverpool on the huge stage as Bobby Clark has stepped onto in recent months. And obviously, yeah, he scored last night, so yes, I'm going to stop talking now.
Good idea. I love a bit of white-hot coefficient chat, George. I don't know about you. My word.
Yeah, well, we didn't get much of that there, do we? I wonder what Stefan Kuntz is doing these days. Just totally unrelated subject, but...
Oh, man alive. Right. Oh, Arsenal have been drawn against Bayern in the Champions League quarterfinals. There you go, Chris. There's one for your coefficient.
Well, head-to-head on the coefficient there, yeah.
God, that's why I love football. Coefficients. Come on. Right then, that's it. Thanks very much, chaps. It's been an eye-opening episode, I have to be honest.
Yeah, not sure where we go with this, but I'm optimistic. I look forward to chatting to you both next week after Newcastle have progressed into the semi-final of the FA Cup on penalties or lost 5-0.
Excellent. Just covering all of the options there. Definitely. Right, then that's it. Thanks very much, Chris. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. I look forward to regaling you all on Monday by telling you that George realised as we were driving down the M6 that he'd forgotten his away ticket, which is still in the post for another Manchester fixture. So.
Well, you can also just read out the WhatsApp messages I sent you as Man City's 6th goal goes beyond Martin Dubravka in the 5th minute. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm optimistic at this point. And anyway, the thing I am optimistic about is that whatever happens on Saturday next week becomes cup final week for us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because the women team are playing at Luton. I'm going to go to that. Can't wait.
Should be brilliant. Right then, thanks, George. Thanks a lot for your time. Make sure you get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's just about it. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week, and we shall speak to you on the other side of the weekend. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Bye-bye. Don't have nightmares.
Bobby Cock. Lee Cock and Bobby Lee Cock.
Fucking hell. The way an American says cock is actually cock. Lee Cock. Mm. schoolboy sniggering at penis jokes. Look at Ollie. Look at Ollie. Absolutely not happy at all.
No, not even slightly happy.
The Athletic.